Hola, soy Mateo Bajamich. Les quería mandar un saludo muy grande a Soccer Matters. Les mando un abrazo muy grande.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Big shout out to our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. No telling where soccer on the radio in Houston would be without John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Again, 713-322-HURT, John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. All right, let's keep it going tonight here on ESPN 97.5. Long time, I'm going to say friend, because I've done a lot of his college games. I can't say I've drank a lot of beer with him or anything like that, but he's somebody that everybody knows around the country when it comes to men's soccer. He is Sasha Sarofsky, the head coach of Maryland. He's won numerous national titles, placed many a player in Major League Soccer, and he joins us now. Sasha, how are you?
I'm great, Glenn. Great to be with you, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. And I know COVID's posed a lot of problems for college and the college game, and really just want to kind of get your take on how it's gone so far this year. What are the plans for NCAA soccer in the spring? And just kind of give you a minute or two here to kind of get us up to date.
Well, as most of your viewers or listeners will know, all of the college fall sports got canceled late this summer on the eve of a preseason. We were told there's going to be no college fall sports, at least in the Big Ten. There was a few conferences that played American football, college football, and the ACC and some of the Southern SEC, Big 12, all continued to play. And they played men's and women's soccer, actually. But the 90% of the college soccer programs on both the men's and women's side had their fall seasons postponed. And now the NCAA announced in mid-September that we will have a spring NCAA championship, which we're delighted with. And that championship looks like it's set to start on February 3rd and culminate with a College Cup in Cary, North Carolina, between May 13th and the 17th. And interestingly, both the men's and women's College Cups will be at the same location between May 13th and 17th. So we're kind of excited about that, excited to maybe have a national championship in good weather. And hopefully at that point, we have a vaccine and maybe we get some fans in the stands.
Yeah, so that's Cary, North Carolina. That's a great choice for the national championships, and it's always been a great spot. Tell me a little bit about how this affects recruiting now, because you may have some players who want to extend their college career. I think that gets a little nebulous for some people.
Yeah, it's created a lot of anxiety, confusion, uncertainty for the coaches, the players, and the incoming recruits. So when the season got pushed into the spring, the NCAA followed up what they did last year with college spring sports, and virtually every athlete that's playing any college sport this year is going to get an extra year of eligibility. So this entire year, because there'll be shortened seasons, interrupted seasons, and teams will play anywhere from a few games to maybe a full season, the NCAA has unilaterally basically come out and said, this is basically a free year. Now, that sounds great in theory, but it's very complicated. The majority of men's soccer players are on partial scholarships and some are on no scholarships. So a lot of these kids who will maybe get their degree or graduate or look to move on to play professionally or go and get a job, they probably will not take advantage of that additional year. But in some cases, kids will go to grad school and go to different places. So right now there's quite a bit of movement and decisions coaches have to make in terms of roster management. And it's not easy, but it's a good thing the NCAA did really to provide that relief, but it has created some complications, but I think we can work through those.
Yeah, because in the case of my nephew, he had his final year in the fall, didn't get to play, and you know he's going to end up graduating. I don't think he's going to stick around for an extra year because he's going to have his degree and get out into the work world. So very challenging. We're talking to Sasha Sarofsky, the head coach of Maryland. Now, look, you've been a tremendous proponent for the college game. You've been a tremendous proponent of making it a split semester sport where you play in both the fall and spring. So I'm thinking COVID-19 has probably helped this process maybe a little bit.
Well, it's hurt, and I think eventually will help. In the short run, it's hurt the process because we were scheduled for an April 2019 vote on a two-semester model known as a 21st century model. And we had really made so much headway that we were starting to feel like we had the votes to possibly get this passed. And obviously, when the world shut down in mid-March, the Division I Council really pushed all the legislations back. So we rightfully said, let's give us another year. Let's hold off and see where it's at. So just earlier today, I was met with my 21st century committee of the coaching body leaders across the country to really restart the conversation and see if it makes sense to get this back up for a vote in April. I think there's some positive developments in the fact that, for example, the ACC this year is playing the split season model, and we have three major women's conferences are playing the split season model. It's not quite the same spread out and well thought out 21st century model, but I think they're going to show that it can be done, and perhaps it should be done. However, there are some economic impacts of the COVID crisis that may make us pause for a little bit longer, because right now there is real financial burden on every single campus. There is furloughs at the NCAA conference offices all over campus, and there is a tightening of the belt. So there is this sort of reduction mode happening, survival mode across a lot of college campuses. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't move forward to 21st century model, and we are going to be working within conferences and the NCAA to see if it makes sense to push this for a vote in April, or maybe we push it back a month or two. But it's a great idea, Glenn. It's for the players. It's for the game. It makes sense. And I am passionate, and I will not let go until the day we get this passed.
No, we know that from you. Now, I just want to bring up, like, Angela Kelly at Texas. They're excited because they're going to have a spring season. Yeah. They got to play a limited Big 12 schedule. Yeah. So in some ways, does this kind of prove or pose as a litmus test maybe for the women's game also to maybe get a little bit more heavily involved in a two-semester 21st century model, as you said?
Yeah, I think so. I think the women have been a little bit behind. They haven't been as proactive as the men looking at this 21st century model. But I do think that you got some of the most powerful conferences, as you mentioned. Ange at Texas is going to have a chance to experience, playing a championship part of their season in the spring. So they played some games in the fall. I think what most coaches will recognize is if you can space out the time between games to have the proper rest and recovery, to have the proper preparation leading up to a game. I mean, it's wonderful. There's way too many college kids getting hurt and just surviving rather than thriving in that experience. And then the games sometimes don't mirror the quality that they should exhibit. And finally, I'm excited to see what a championship in May looks like. Whether we have fans or not, I just am excited to see what that looks like, because I do believe we're going to have a really good championship experience this year. And I think it's going to get a lot more of the women's coaches and players, I think, much more excited about this in time. But whether the women jump on or not, the men are committed to pushing this through. And we will be respectful of a timeline. We'll play it smartly of when we push. But we're going to eventually play over two semesters in college soccer.
Do you have some coaches that are adamant about not wanting to do the split semester? I'm just very curious about what the makeup of that would be. And, of course, we're not going to reveal anybody. But does that happen?
No, not really. On the men's side, we've had surveys done for almost 5 years now. And we're about 92-95% in favor on the men's side. And I think even the one or two or select coaches that have some reservations, it has a lot to do with maybe their own personal weather conditions or maybe budget conditions. So it's a very sort of, I guess I don't want to use the word narrow, but it's relative to their own world. But really, we've got 95%. I mean, it's hard to get 95% of people to agree that the sky is blue, on a sunny day.
Good point. Very good. That's the smartest thing that'll be said in this interview, I think. No question about it. We're talking to Sasho Sarofsky, the head coach of Maryland, really interested in this. Now look, you mentioned this is the right thing for the players, but this is great for coaches, coaching education. Men like yourself that have devoted your life to not only taking players to the highest level that they can possibly go in soccer, but also to prepare them for life. Let's face it, you are a huge mentor to all the young people that come through your program.
Glenn, one of my mentors was Bob Gansler. And Bob Gansler always referred to us coaches as teachers in shorts and t-shirts. And we in college soccer, in particular, really understand the role of being teachers and coaches. But we are also, responsible for growing the game. And I've taken it upon myself as one of the leaders is to find a better way. I think it's easy sometimes to get stuck in a way and keep doing it over and over. It doesn't make sure it's right. And we saw an opening about 7 years ago when the NCAA came out and they said, we care about student athlete welfare. And we said, well, if you really care, then we're going to cash in that check. We're going to bring it to the table. And so we've made a lot of progress. And I think right now we're in a good place. We think we have a lot of momentum. We'll get there. I think the women are coming along. I wish they were with us. I think it'd be, we'd be in upper 90. We'd pass it, but we're, it's a slow grind. We'll get there.
Sasho, before I let you go, I just want to take you into you as a coach now. And coaches will have to change now. I mean, it's not about just a little rest and recovery and on to your next game. I mean, now you're going to have more time. Maybe your scouting is going to become different. You have the ability to take specific topics maybe in certain training. I mean, it's going to really be kind of different, won't it?
Well, different in such a good way, in such a great way. I mean, to really be able to, number one, do things with when you know your players are mentally and physically refreshed and prepared is an amazing thing. The second part is, you know, you're going to have players be able to compete for playing time in training. Right now, we have such a short preseason and games come so fast and furious that a lot of times, you know, if you're not in the starting group at the beginning, it's hard to get into the lineup. We also have players who will take an injury, Glenn, and they won't feel like they have to rush back and play because they might miss four games in a 10-day period. So you have so many positives, but from a tactical preparation, from, you know, you have times now. If you want to maybe, you know, switch into a 3-5-2 out of your 4-3-3 or prepare, you know, how you're going to press, you have some time to really do that, you know, to counter press these things. And a lot of times right now, it's kind of, we're doing it through video. We're just kind of like trying to cram, and now you can actually teach and you can prepare and you can go. And I think I'm excited about it. I know the coaches are, if we get to that point.
Sasha, would it be fair for me to say there were points in your career based on the condensed college schedule where you looked at your team and you were thinking about changing something tactically that might have been a little bit different and included some different things, and then you kind of said, nah, I can't do it at this point. It's just too condensed.
Well, it happened all the time. In fact, you know, we all try to have at least one week in the middle of the year where there was no midweek game, and we kind of look forward to that week, and maybe that was the week that we would incorporate maybe a little bit of a change, a tweak, an adjustment to prepare a team. Because, you know, when you're playing, you know, every Friday, Tuesday, Saturday, you know, with every 3-4 days or Fridays, you just have no time. You're just kind of recovering, and you know, you work a lot on the mind at that point to try to get the kids in a, you know, good place so they can feel they can succeed. But, you know, you have injuries. You know, I've said this publicly so many times. You know, I feel like I have one of the top programs in college soccer. And, you know, we draw a lot of fans to our games. But I feel it's unfair sometimes for fans that come to a lot of the midweek games or to come to the third game in 7 days or the fourth game in 10 days because you're not really seeing the best that the players can offer, you know, but you're seeing incredible effort and you know, just a lot of good things, but it just doesn't feel like a really good soccer game. We saw with MLS this year when they had to cram in about a 6-week window where they played almost every 3-4 days, and you could just see that the quality really dropped off. And then now you watch some of the playoff games and there's some time in between, and you see teams are really well prepared, and it looks and feels like a really good level soccer. And that's what I want for college soccer.
And that's why I'm going to let you go, because we got in about an hour and 5 minutes. It all kicks off. Three games in a row tonight. It's going to be a great night. We appreciate you being on the show, as always. What a proponent for the game in this country and looking at it, not from the standpoint of just winning and losing, but from the standpoint of what's best for all involved. Sasha, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, that's Sasha Sarofsky, number of titles at Maryland. And by the way, there's Maryland players in action all over the Major League Soccer playoffs. All right, break time here on Soccer Matters. As we roll to break here, a big thank you to Advantage BMW Midtown. Well, my friends down there have put me in a vehicle I've bought from Advantage BMW Midtown numerous times. Love the drive of a BMW. It's like no other. I've got an X5 now. Love it. I do know why they call it the ultimate driving machine. And as I've mentioned many times before, incredible 23-hour drive to New Jersey to see my parents through all the beautiful states going eastward towards the Garden State. The other thing I love at Advantage BMW Midtown is the customer service, second to none. Advantage BMW Midtown will cover you. Sales, service, finance, it can be done easy. Getting a 3, 5, 7 if you like sedans. Advantage BMW Midtown. Get that Houston hometown advantage. That's why I shop Advantage. Advantage BMW in Midtown. AdvantageBMWHouston.com. Proud sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We'll take a break, then we'll roll on.
Hi, this is Adam Lundquist from the Houston Dynamo, and thank you for listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Here's where you can find me. Facebook, Soccer Matters. Twitter, Glenn Davis Soc. Instagram, Glenn Davis Soc, S-O-C. And Glenn Davis Soccer Daspit.com. As always, the show is presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. A big thank you to John and his firm. We really appreciate their support of soccer. They're personal injury attorneys. John and his firm, they'll cover you. Accidents, whether it's car, boat, motorcycle. You might drive an 18-wheeler, refinery, construction. Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. And, well, we appreciate them keeping us on the air and bringing you the best in soccer talk here in Houston consistently for years. All right, let's roll on with the show. Janine Becky plays for Manchester City. She comes on now. We compare the leagues. We talk about her career in the game and what's happening in England.
Janine, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thanks so much for having me. I remember back when I was in Houston and we were on the show, so it's come full circle.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I couldn't make it over to Manchester, but we'll have to just do it via conference here. So excited to talk to you about City. Let's just first off start about a little bit about just your general thoughts on where the sport, the women's game is in England and with this growth of the women's game.
I think it's easy to say that even in the 2 years, it's my third year that I've been here, the game has come so far just here in England. And you could say that for, you know, definitely in the US and Canada and in a lot of other places in Europe. But I think with the Lionesses doing so well at the 2019 World Cup, it really amped up the watch hours that people were putting into to women's football and just the commitment by brands. Obviously, Barclays bought the league last year, which is fantastic. It's a huge sponsor for us. So we've really gone up the ranks in terms of popularity over here in England over the last 2 years, and hoping that it continues to be on the rise.
All right, through your lens, I mean, you've done it all, the youth game, the college game, the NWSL, you've played internationally, won a bronze medal at the Olympics. Now you're over in England, a part of this growth of this new professional league with all these massive brands like Manchester City. Looking through your lens, what was the appeal now to go over to England?
I think originally my motivation was, where can I put myself in the best position to be at the top of my game come the World Cup last summer? So for me, that was my main motivation. I also wanted to experience playing overseas while I was still in my younger years and my younger career. So I'm 26 now. I was just 23 when I moved over here, turning 24. So that was really exciting for me to make that move when I was still young and didn't really have any roots down in the U.S. A lot. So I think the attraction was, this is going to be a place where I'm going to get better in a short amount of time because it's a challenging environment with top, top international players from all across the world. And that's what I want to be. That's where I want to be to perform at the World Cup. So that was my initial motivation, and I just have loved every second since I've been here. I absolutely got what I was looking for when I came here and feel like I was at the top of my game going into 2019 that summer, which was, it's crazy that it's just last summer because it feels so long ago. But even since then, I've just taken massive strides in my game, and I can just see the difference that being here has made.
What about just the simple notion of, you know, when we talk about the men's game, you know, guys in Major League Soccer, they want to go, you know, Europe may be the pinnacle, right? It could be England. It could be the Premier League. Whatever it is, it could be a change of environment, culture. What are some of the other factors? Is it facilities? Is it brand recognition? Is it the attention the game may get in Manchester? To me, it looks like you get tremendous coverage in the Manchester Evening News.
Yeah, and the media coverage has, like the game, really grown over the last couple years. I would say probably noticeably the last 5-6 years, maybe even decade, it's really significantly inclined. And when you talk about, you know, what are the other motivations, I believe that by far we are at least top three in the world in facilities. And the commitment that the club has made financially into the women's team to bring big time players all together. So if you look at the roster that we have this season, we've got big time world players on our team, top internationals. I mean, that's not cheap to bring all of those players together. So the financial investment that the club has made a massive difference. And that's what you have to do to win the trophies that we want to win. I think the difference being in England from a cultural perspective is that football is life here. It's what people, you know, they're born a City fan, they die a City fan, or, you know, whatever other team you support. And you really feel that in just living in the culture. And it's been really fun to experience that as someone who's played my whole life and been incredibly interested in the Premier League since I started watching the game. So to now, you know, share a facility with these men's players that you ever only watch and you can dream of, you know, being like them one day. And just being held to that standard has been really, really cool. And I think there's a long way to go, don't get me wrong. But being here has really opened my eyes to the potential of women's football, especially in the last couple of years.
Talking to Janine Becky of Manchester City. So does that aid in player development? I would have to think so, that being in that culture, being in that environment, soccer all the time, as opposed to the U.S. where, you know, we're a part of a giant sports landscape with other traditional sports. I would have to say, does that, or let me ask you, does that aid in player development?
I think so. I think when you look at the system, the youth system in the U.S. compared to the youth system in England, and I think both have their pros and cons. I absolutely love growing up in a country where sports in general are so highly valued. You know, I played all kinds of sports growing up. I was definitely not soccer specific, not even in high school. So, but here, you know, I have players on my team who are 21 years old and have been professionals for 4 years. So it's wild that, you know, they kind of grow up playing for their local team. And then, you know, at 14, 15, you're starting to look at a club that you potentially want to go professional with. And that's just so different than the U.S. And I think there's massive benefits to that. You know, those players are playing at the highest level of the game so, so young, and may find their peak in their game at a much younger age than maybe someone like me who went through the college system, which was incredibly important for my development. And then, you know, I'm 26 and I have those teammates that are 21 and, you know, we're playing at the same level. So it's definitely personal. But I do think being in this culture develops players at a faster rate at a younger age, because it just starts a little bit earlier. The level is higher at a younger age.
Just curious, is there much crossover with the men's team? In other words, do they take interest in watching your games like you do with theirs potentially?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of crossover. Obviously, they have an incredibly busy season. And this, because of the craziness that's going on in the world right now, we've become quite busy as well. So we're on separate sides of the building. That's just the way that it's set up. But, you know, there's appearances that some of the girls get to do with the men's players. And anytime I've come into contact with one of them, they're super friendly, very interested in what's going on. A few of them popped out to watch us train in preseason just from a distance. So it's really cool to see them around, and also to kind of have that recognition that we're all doing the same thing, and we're all wearing blue. We're all for the same club. So I think there's a lot of camaraderie being at City with staff, players, men's team, women's team, academy. That's really special and quite unique to City.
NBC has been covering your games. I watched the game this weekend. I mean, it's pretty incredible coverage. And it's over here in the U.S. It's kind of like coming in the NWSL's backyard here. So I'm thinking that competition is a good thing. For you to know that your games are on in the United States and your family can watch, and this is a part of the plan to expose people to the Women's League in England, I got to think this is pretty uplifting.
It's fantastic. And actually, although time change can be very frustrating because of trying to talk to family, it's obviously early in the morning. One of my favorite things was to be able to get up and watch the Premier League early in the morning. And now the reality is that women's soccer fans get to wake up early in the morning and watch our games. And I think it's just a testament to the commitment that I spoke about earlier of the media to cover our games and the talent that our league is seeing. And obviously with the times being how they are and the NWSL just wrapping up their fall series, we're one of the most attractive leagues to be watching right now. We've got top internationals all over the league. This will be the most competitive that the WSL has ever been. And obviously with the transfer of a lot of the American players over here, there's more interest from the U.S. to watch these games, which has benefited me fantastically because I have family and friends that are always wondering how they can watch our games. And the FA launched the FA player last season, which was fantastic because all the games were streamed live, but it's different than having a TV broadcast. And obviously NBC does such a great job with their broadcasts, and we were all really excited to hear that was going to be happening.
She's Janine Becky. She played at Texas Tech under Tom Stone. 2016 Olympics in Rio, had 3 goals for Canada. They won a bronze medal, historic moment for Canada. COVID challenges. Tell me a little bit about how you guys have navigated that, or you ladies have navigated that.
Yeah, well, first off, I have to say the club and the league and the Premier League and everyone has done a fantastic job managing the situation and putting the safety protocols in place to continue to let us play. I think that it's, at this point, you know, it's just exciting that we're continuing to play games. And obviously there's the we wish this and we wish that, and it's been really hard to play without fans. But yeah, I think when it came on, we were kind of in the last, starting the last third of our season back in March. And I remember we were about to play the FA Cup quarterfinal game against Leicester. And they said, you have to shut the facility down for a week. And now I laugh at that because I'm like, who thought that this was going to be gone in a week? Or that the information was going to change. But so actually the club ended up allowing me to go back home and fly back to the States. So I actually spent about 3.5 months in Colorado with my mom, which was great. A lot of family time there, but we came back and obviously the season didn't continue, which was disappointing, but totally understandable. And yeah, we've been in a really strict bubble, quite restricted. Everyone is in terms of going out, wearing masks. We're quite careful to not be eating in restaurants and really limit our exposure to other people, which is difficult, but also it's worth it to be able to continue to play. And knock on wood, we've been really lucky with our club. They've done an incredible job managing and put in the financial resources for us to be tested weekly, which has been really important. And just gives us a sense of a peace about that, knowing that we're in an environment that's COVID-free and we want to continue that. So keep listening to the government guidelines, but we're getting on.
So the differences now in the NWSL from a tactical and maybe an athletic standpoint to playing in England now, what are they, and what is more maybe appealing to you playing in England than the NWSL and vice versa?
Yeah, I've answered this question so many times, and every time the question comes up, I'm like, how do I answer this in the best way? With my experience in the NWSL, obviously now I've been away from the league for a few years, and I follow it very closely. I obviously have tons of friends and former teammates that are still there and have an incredible amount of respect for what the NWSL is doing, and have an incredible amount of respect for the way that the game is played there. And I think naturally, when you speak about athleticism and things like that, it is naturally a more transitional game. There's a lot more. I think if you looked at the data, there'd probably be more distance covered, more high-speed running. And I don't really know what the reason is for that, other than that is kind of the American model. And in my opinion, it's shifting to a more tactical, possession-based game, which was what my attraction was to come here. Especially at a club like City, where you watch Pep's team bounce the ball around and they're very, very pretty team to watch. But then they get the job done. They're ruthless. And I think that's definitely how the women's team works as well, and how it's been since I've been here. But we are kind of seeing now that more players are coming between leagues, and we're seeing players from all over the world play in both leagues. It's evening out. And the game is more similar than ever before. The game here is more athletic and demanding than it ever has been. And that's exciting, because that's what I brought here when I came. And then what they've given me is a better tactical sense, higher standards technically, to be good on the ball, to be sharp. So I think that there's so many benefits to both leagues, and I've seen both of those benefits and been really lucky to play in both leagues. And I'm interested to go back to the NWSL at some point and experience the difference.
Will this, in a healthy way, raise the bar for the NWSL? Because, look, we've seen different – Tobin Heath, you mentioned Kristen Press. You're kind of a harbinger getting over there before some of these other players. Rose Lavelle's on your team, Sam Mewis. Is this going to raise the bar for the NWSL? And in the end, is this going to be better for everybody?
Absolutely. I think it's great for the WSL to have these players come over. I mean, who's going to complain about having a world champion on their team? I don't think very many people. So Sam and Rose have come into our environment and definitely pushed the standard and raised the level, because they're fantastic players. And I think that obviously with the climate of the world right now, we're lucky that we're playing a pretty normal season. So obviously that was a big attraction for those players, but also speaking to them one-on-one, the attraction was the game, and the difference and the challenges that they'll face having never played anywhere but at home. And I think that absolutely it'll be better for everyone. And I think that their influence of playing in the NWSL has an effect on players here, potentially wanting to go to the NWSL and experience that, which is great. Obviously, selfishly, I want more international players in the NWSL to continue to raise the bar. But we'll see it. And I think we're definitely seeing the benefit of having players come overseas.
Security too. I mean, you've signed a long-term contract. Now, I know you and I had spoke before we did the interview about some people are coming on loan and others are signing longer-term deals. I mean, security is not something that the women's player has always had. This has got to be something that's a very, very appealing.
Absolutely. And especially in these times, I mean, everyone's trying to find that security in jobs, in anything. So I think, yeah, it's been a long time coming for women's soccer to have a really stable environment for players to depend on. And I think that it's a testament to the leagues continuing to put money into the game and signing, you know, more than 1 and 2 year deals. You know, we're seeing 3, 4, and 5 year deals some places, which is so typical in the men's game, but not very typical in the women's game. And it's so important that we go there so that we don't see so much change all the time, so that there is some stability and some foundation to having competitive leagues. Because like I said before, this will be the most competitive the WSL has ever been. And you don't want that to just be for a year. So these teams are making the investment, and I think that's really important.
Talking to Janine, Becky, we're going to wrap it up here with two quick ones. Janine plays for Manchester City in England. All right. Are you used to calling it football over soccer now?
Yes. People are nice about it. They don't – I got made fun of when I first came here saying soccer. I think it just sounds so weird to them. And obviously in the States, when you say football, people assume you're saying American football. So I go back and forth kind of depending on who I talk to, but I definitely feel more comfortable saying football than ever before.
Look up soccer. You might be surprised of its origins. Just that's all I'll tell you.
I mean, do that. That's a good.
Look up the word soccer and its origins. And then the last one. England's a tea country, but you tell me you drink coffee. Can they make a good cup over there? Because I'm just curious. Yeah,
there is fantastic coffee where I am, but I have started to be a tea drinker. I never saw what it was about English tea, but I definitely have started to drink a few cups. So I'm broadening my horizons, is what I like to say.
Well, Janine, thank you so much. I very much appreciate this. A very enlightening interview. I think people are obviously have enjoyed this, and we appreciate you coming on. Best of luck with Manchester City.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
What a great way to end the show here tonight with Janine Becky from across the Atlantic talking about the women's game. Time for another break on Soccer Matters, again presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. Any kind of accident you get into, you want the representation that you deserve and need. It's John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT, DaspitLaw.com. Again, 713-322-HURT. They are bilingual, and they are proud sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Also, Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway in the Marquee Entertainment Center, Liverpool supporters group heads over there. Go in there, say hello to our good friend Peter Kingston. 18 TVs, big screens, and again, all the Premier League matches and soccer matches from around the world. It's not just for the Liverpool supporters group, although it is their home. All right, we will take a break. We will continue to roll on.
I'm Vlad Kendanovsky, the coach of U.S. Women National Team, and you're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Big shout-out to my friend Jan Christensen, Danish Inspirations, Modern Contemporary Furniture on Fondren. A big thank you for their support of this show, and they've got all kinds of great modern contemporary furniture over there on Fondren. Get over there to Danish Inspirations, Modern Contemporary Furniture. They carry Stressless as well. Tremendous selection. All right, let's keep it going tonight here on ESPN 97.5. Tab Ramos is joining us now ahead of a number of big decisions he'll be making in shaping the Dynamo roster ahead of the 2021 season. Well, Tab, pretty historic day today. Weston McKennie scoring on a field with Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi at the Camp Nou. And little known fact about you, tell us about when you were with Real Betis and you got a 1-0 win over Barcelona in that stadium.
Yeah, we actually played a quarterfinal cup game at the Camp Nou and knocked Barcelona's dream team out of the cup that year. We went to the semifinals.
Tell me a little bit more about that day and what you remember about it, because that's pretty rarefied air. There are not many American players who can say that they've won at Barcelona.
Well, I know that I came off the bench in that game, and also that we crossed midfield maybe three times, and one of the times we scored. So it was not a back-and-forth 1-0 game. It was definitely a all-Barcelona, you know, 80% of possession for them. And the one chance we had to score, we scored. So that was good because we had played at our stadium before and tied 0-0. So this was the return game because it was home and away for the cup in Spain. So we tied 0-0 at home. Then we had to go to Barcelona and win, and we won. So we went to the semis. Yeah.
See, this is what I love about you. You're very honest. You could have clearly said this was an unbelievable up and down game. There was no B in sports sense, so probably nobody here has been able to watch it. Yet you are very honest. Hey, yeah. What an experience that must have been for you. You know, big weekend. You as such a big part of U.S. soccer, not only as a player, but as the under 20 coach for a decade. To see Weston McKennie, to see Christian Pulisic, and to see Gio Reyna scoring goals for clubs of this stature, what does that mean to you?
Well, I think for the first time, U.S. soccer is in a different place. You know, in the past, we always try to scrape out being the underdog and trying to fight with the best teams. And, you know, we've had players go overseas and play for Premier League teams and do well overseas. But now our players are world class. You know, our players are now in a category where they've never been before. And yeah, I think it's a completely, you know, it's really apples and oranges comparing now to the way things used to be.
Dynamo head coach Tom Ramos joining us. Give us a little bit of a synopsis of kind of the things you're thinking about here. I know there's an expansion draft coming up. You're working on the roster. You're solidifying contracts. You may be renegotiating some. Just give us a little bit of an idea of, you know, the amount of different things that are going on as a head coach of the team right now.
Yeah, obviously there's a lot going on. You know, we had last week we had to get through to finalizing what options we're gonna move forward with on the roster for those players that had options going into 2021. We had to make those decisions and also decide if we don't renew some of those options, if we still have a possibility of renegotiating some of those contracts. So that's part of it. Then we go into obviously the expansion draft, for which we have to protect players. We get to protect 12. But, you know, there's a possibility that you in the expansion draft, you end up losing a player that you actually want to keep. So that's always a danger. But that's always been part of the expansion of the league. So that's something you kind of have to live with. So we have to participate in that. We have to prepare for that. And then obviously because of that, you know, we're working on a few trades with other teams. We're working on a few acquisitions from other teams. And none of that can happen before the expansion draft, because really if we did that, then it would be one more player to protect when they come. And so that, you know, so it's almost better to do it after. So there's a number of things going on in terms of making the roster better going into next year. And then also, you know, it's almost like a domino effect with the way things work. So Mauro, as you know, has been transferred now to Tijuana. And, you know, but this is something that has been going on now for a period of time. You know, the initial idea was for Mauro to get transferred, if not beginning of the season, at the middle of the season. And then because of the pandemic, that was put on hold. And now we find ourselves doing it at the end of the year. So same sort of situation with Albert, to be honest. And so now I feel like, not only are we preparing for all these things in terms of getting the team ready for next year and having a different roster next year, but also I think it's truly the beginning of a new cycle. You know, Mauro has done a lot of great things for this club, will remain, I'm sure, in the fans' view as one of the best players ever to have been here. Same goes for Albert. You can say a lot about the contribution of Kyoto, who left the year before. So, and I think this is now, you know, now this is the beginning of all that change. And I'm personally looking forward with that, to that. And yeah, a lot is going on every day right now.
So with this transfer fee for Mauro Manotas, are you going to be able to reinvest that in specifically another striker? How does that work?
Yeah. I mean, every indication we have from ownership is that we can reinvest. I think now it's time to be careful and build a little bit the foundation of the club first. So that we make sure that at the moment we're ready to invest, that we're investing in the right player in the one area that we need the most. At the time being, we're not desperate with that. We're more focused on sort of rebuilding the foundation of who we want to be here long term.
So you have mentioned pretty candidly that you're looking to increase, the quality of each line of the team. Any more you can expand on along those lines?
No, not really. I mean, last year, if there was one place we lacked, certainly was up front. You know, we created a lot of chances last year, enough chances to have been a playoff team for sure. And yet we couldn't score. So that's an area that we have to address. Now, without Mauro here, that's obviously, it gives us even less competition up front. So it's certainly an area that we're looking to address with a couple of players. We're also looking into the center of midfield. One of the things about the center of midfield last year, I felt that we needed to get better at holding the ball in those areas and handling balls in traffic. And those players are not easy to find. And so we're looking into that area. And then in the back, obviously, it's, you know, it's a little bit different playing, you know, the way the Houston Dynamo was built in the past, which was a sort of sit with most of the team and counter with three. And then Tomas was the help to those three. So you had Albert and you had Mauro and you had Kyoto. And now you had sometimes, you know, if Martinez could get there, he would get there. Whereas now we're becoming a team where we all attack and we all defend. And because of that, defenders need to do a different type of running. They need to do better. They need to do better in 1v1 matchups. And so we're looking to add into on that line as well.
Leadership, are you looking for additional leadership, a focal point leader, or is that not really high on the agenda?
It's very high on the agenda. I think Zarek was really the first piece to that. When we brought Zarek last year, you know, you could see that besides being a good soccer player, Zarek is one that represents the team really well. Zarek is one that pushes the team well. He's one that organizes on the field. He's the one that carries the values of the club off the field. These are all the things that are really important and all the things that are looking for in the new players.
You have made it very clear through your actions and through your rhetoric that you want this to be inclusive. And you've led the way being very transparent. Is this essential for the future and changing the club?
It has to be. At the end of the day, I don't make all the decisions, but I think it has to be. To be a successful club, we have to be the people's club. We have to be Houston's people's club, and we have to be accountable for that. You know, we have to show our face. We have to say how things are going. When they're going well, we're going to be happy. When they're not going well, we're not, but we still have to stick together. And I think when you build a roster of players who can understand that, that we are Houston's team, and that they belong to Houston, then I think it makes it easy. And I think, you know, that's why I said Zarek was the first piece of that puzzle. And I think we're looking at those type of qualities in the people that we bring in.
I look at the league and I look at the teams that got eliminated from the playoffs, the LAFCs, the Galaxies, and the Portland Timbers, who, you know, all have tremendous squads and teams and history. And I'm just looking, man, those guys are going to want to come back retooling big time. Any thoughts on just the overall competitiveness and how it continues to grow in this league? Because it does seem pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible grind, really, when you think about it, because, you know, you're watching Minnesota play Seattle in the Western. Let's just take the Western Conference, because that's where we are, obviously. And then you look at LAFC and you look at Portland and you look at LA Galaxy, all teams who invest a lot of money, who next year they all want to be in the final. So if you take those two that already were in the final this year, you take those three who were not, and you add to that, you know, Sporting Kansas City, who made, you know, $20 million investment this year with the players that they signed, and you add to that FC Dallas, who's always a good team. Well, you know, that's just the beginning. And then it's likely that Nashville will come back to our side next year. And if that happens, obviously Nashville already did well. So, yeah, it's a grind. You know, when you think about the playoffs, all you can think about is, hey, you know what, let's build the best team we can build, and then we'll take it one game at a time and see in the end where we fall.
Yeah, that's not to mention 2.5 hours up the road, a couple of guys you know in Austin FC coming in Texas. That's going to make things interesting, don't you think?
Well, I think rivalries are always great, you know, and they make the league more exciting. Hopefully people will be able to be back in the stadiums next year, because how great will it be when – you know, when we're in Austin and there's a whole section of orange that is cheering our goals.
Last one before I let you go, and I'm taking you back to Mauro Minotas, the Sale, the striker position. Is that a position you look within the country and outside the country with?
Both. I mean, you know, it's likely that that initially we look in the country and see if we can do something within the league that can help us on an established player that can come in, and we know that he's already adapted to the league. And then of course, yeah, we're always looking overseas. The challenge overseas is that, you know, it's unless you make an investment, which it's obviously a hands down, everybody can see that this is the best player, and that, you know, obviously cost a lot. You have to do your homework really well. And the environment in the world right now is not one that really makes it easy to do your homework, because we can't travel. We can't go meet with players. We can't go watch them live. There's a lot that you can't do. And I would hate to miss on someone because we didn't do our homework.
Tab, last night, a couple of University of Maryland guys playing at the back for Minnesota United, and Ngol, Dane St. Clair, Chase Gaspar. These were guys I saw in college cups. Is it essential to get some value out of some good college players in the future?
For sure. I think, you know, Sam Junkway is good value for us right now. You know, he already started to get a lot of playing time. I think he he has a good future with the club, probably a starting, you know, either a starting left back or could potentially also be a left-sided center back. He's a good player physically. He has all the qualities that we would want here in a player that we would be seeking from another club. So we like that. And yeah, I think this year in particular, this year's draft, having the third pick, we are looking forward to picking a player that's actually going to be a first team player that's going to make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's the time to get a guy that can maybe step in right away, right?
For sure, for sure. We're looking at that pick as a almost like a free transfer. Yep.
Zab, thank you so much for your time. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving and appreciate all the great commentary here.
All right. As always, thank you for having me on, Glenn. Appreciate it.
All right. See you, Tab. Thank you.
Bye.
Great stuff there from Tab Ramos, and just love how really transparent he has been talking about the Houston Dynamo, his roster, and some of his ideas. Great way, as always, to connect with the fans and give them ownership in their team. Love the fact that he uses the word inclusive. So that does it tonight for Soccer Matters. As always, a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, the presenting sponsor of our show on ESPN 97.5. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. You get in an accident, car, boat, motorcycle. You might drive an 18-wheeler. You might work in a refinery. You might do construction. You call John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They'll personalize their approach to your case. They'll work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. Get that representation you need with the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. And a big, big thank you to John and his firm again for getting soccer on the air. Reminder, get over to Facebook, Soccer Matters. Lots of interesting topics over there. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock, and GlennDavisSoccer.com. Podcasts also at PodcastArena.com, Spotify, iTunes, and over on GlennDavisSoccer.com. So thank you very much for tuning in tonight. Next week, two shows on Tuesday and Thursday. We will be rip-roaring and ready to go with all fresh content. On behalf of the firm and Aaron Raybould, Victor Ariza, I'm Glenn Davis.